Here we go. This is Felger and Mass.
Yeah, Rex Ryan here.
I hate guests.
Yep.
There's no reason to touch them.
Keep it in your pants.
Why would you do that?
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, guys. Hey, you know who these Bruins are starting to morph into slowly? The 1990s Atlanta Braves. One world championship and a bunch of playoff gags. But the reason why I called is I wanted to mention Bruce Cassidy. I think he has a stake in this because he was brought in to sort of not just change the way the team plays, but the culture. And I think he's going to address the elephant in the room and say, hey, listen, guys, especially the veterans who have been around for all these playoff failures and game sevens, and these bad home performances like the final game against Florida, and say, hey, listen, you know, I'm well aware, you guys have to be aware of this, and instead of just sort of poo-pooing it to the side and saying, well, you know, the teams last year have nothing to do with the teams this year. I mean, I think it's something that you have to address, and I think they'd be all better for it if they did. And
it's a good point. Mike, I don't know how they do it. You know, I don't know if you come in and you say, guys, it doesn't matter. You'll the sun will come up tomorrow, you know. We'll all go on with our lives whether we win or lose. Go have fun. Or do you come in and say, this is the most important moment of your life. Treat it like it. You know, like, I don't know which approach is right. All I know is there is something that permeates this building in these Game 7s, especially, you know, at home. These home Game 7s. 1-4. 1-4 in front of Rask. And the one win was a joke. The one win should never have happened. So they should really be 0-5 here under Tuukka Rask in Game 7s, or closeout games, I guess I'm saying, when they face elimination. So something had, you know, and again, not to mention all the regular season crap. Like, and the Florida game was on the list. I thought it was when it happened. I'm like, I've seen this before. So what is it? What is it? What goes on around here? What's in the water? What's in the walls? What seeps through the ceiling in a day like that when they're all here and building for that Game 7? I think they got to look at it and try something else because it ain't working.
I mean, it's a tricky one for Cassidy in terms of how you approach it, right? Like, to me, you can't go in with the sun will come up tomorrow. You can't do it. I mean, part of the problem has been slow starts for this team all year long. Like, you got to do it the opposite way. But I don't think you can put pressure on him either. I think you got to give him some sort of Rudy speech. You know, hey, I believe in you. You did it all year long. I believe in you.
Yeah, I'm with Maz on this. Typically, I'm for yelling and being mean. But the way that they looked, as tight and tentative as they looked in that third period, you can't go in there and say, look, listen, you gutless pukes. The season you had, you're going to do this. You're going to do this. You can't do that because I think they're already too tight.
You know, you would, you know, you mentioned, like, what's the common, I mean.
It's Chara Bergeron.
I was just going to say it's the player leadership, right? That's the only common thread. But is Bergeron really a problem?
No. Neither of them are. And I love both those players. I love their professional approach. And they are professionals and serious and hardworking. And I love them for it. But they also sort of lack the, screw it, guys. Let's just go out there and shove it right down their throat. Like, they're not those guys. They're not, you know.
There's no Sean Thornton. There's no.
Well, if that's the case, I want Backes addressing the team.
Right, exactly. Like,
although he came from St. Louis, it's not like they want anything either.
No, it's true. You know, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes Kevin Millar does have to go around the room and offer you a shot.
Yeah.
To get the thing out of your tuchus. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just spitballing. I'm just.
Can all you bring Andy Ferentz in for a night with a bottle of whiskey before the game something. You know, like.
All I know is, and the regular season too, man. How many times have they been in this spot in this building with the team they should beat, with a game right there for them, and you walk out of the game and say, "What was that?" It's happened over and over and over again. I would hate to think it's going to happen again tomorrow night. So I just wonder if they look at it. We'll wonder if there's any commonality there.
I'd be all right with Ferentz showing up with a bottle of Jack Murray. I'm okay with Ferentz.
Alan and Millis. Go ahead, Alan.
I can't believe it. I'm walking by the plane engine, right, when you guys put me on. Okay, so it's like Bobby Schmatz and Stan Jonathan and Cashman, and they can't put the puck in the net. It's like a repeat of the 70s, repeat of the 80s, repeat of the early 90s. We've watched this for 20 years. So I'm just, you know.
Okay, but let me tell you the difference, Alan.
Going to be miserable.
Okay,
oh,
but those
God.
Those teams, yeah. You mentioned were not skilled teams. Okay, you're going back to the lunch pail AC and like that sort of that group.
They were steel workers.
They were plumbers, right? They were hackers and whackers, and they shouldn't have beat Montreal except for 79, right? But they had no business beating those Montreal teams. They weren't good enough. That's not the problem here. The Bruins are one of the most young, skilled, you know, dynamic teams in the league. They are. So how can you explain the fact that they have shot the puck 162 times the last two games and have, what, four goals to show for it? Like, how do you account for that? That's a team that's too tight, that's out, that's thinking itself, that's let the other goalie climb inside their head, is feeling the pressure, etc. That's what I think.
I mean, last night for sure. You know, in some of the other games, they did score goals, right? But last night, there's no question about it. They look like a team that Anderson has crawled inside there. To me, I'd like to see more traffic in front of the net. Like, you know, and Nash did some of that last night, but he and Backes, which is part of the reason I don't want them on the same line, like, you know,
they're slow, but they did create some mess in there.
Yeah, I like the idea of them being able to create traffic in front of the net for two different lines rather than just one. Like, to me, those guys are big, they're tough, and the Bruins need to move bodies now because Toronto's doing a hell of a lot better job in their own end than they did at the beginning of the series.
Here's Tim in New Hampshire. Hi, Tim.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. I got to agree with Murray. I thought this team was different, and I thought these kids couldn't get absorbed by the old bad juju and the bad history, but it's flowing right into them. There were two things that I thought could kill us in the series. Number one, the quick ups of the Leafs in the transition game. When they pinch, they're getting blown away. And number two, as funny as it sounds, Thomas Plekanec, that old washed-up tab, has been a Bruin killer his whole life. And as much as I love Bergeron, and he's my whoopee, to use a Maz phrase, he's been getting beat by Plekanec, and they've been getting frustrated by old man Marlowe, and he really needs to step it up.
Okay, I think there's something to that. I think Bergeron's not right. I think Bergeron's hurt. Has to be. He just looks like he's like kind of a non-factor, it feels like.
At times, he's invisible. I mean, as much as he can be. At times, it's like you don't even notice him. And so, remember, he had that stretch in the middle of the year where he scored all those goals. Like, he was literally scoring almost a goal every other game, for crying out loud. Then he got hurt, and it's like he just has vanished. So, to me, I wonder if it's something with his hands, wrist, something like that, that is affecting his skill. Because it doesn't look like he's laboring up the ice. I don't notice that. Do you?
No, I don't think so. He's just not. But he's definitely not the offensive factor that he was for much of the year.
But he's been good on faceoffs, so then I wonder, maybe it is in his hands. Like, I don't know.
Mark and Warren with the Patriots thought from Maz. Hi, Mark.
Hey, first, so with the Bruins, you guys are crazy if you think they didn't take as many chances at net last night than they did in games 4 and 5. Games 4 and 5, they were skating all over the place. They were so hesitant. They were waiting for the perfect play every single time. But as far as the Patriots go, Maz, get off of Garoppolo. The guy's played how many games, seriously, and started so many games. Now he's going to deal with Ndamukong Suh, Aaron Donald. Then he's going to deal with the Arizona Cardinals pass rush. And then he's going to deal with the Seahawks. Like, give this guy a break. You wanted to trade Brady for this guy. Look at everything that Brady's done. Look at everything that Brady did. He threw for 500 yards in the Super Bowl, man. 500 yards!
And fumbled.
MVP!
Good job, Jay Stu. Go ahead, Maz. What's your answer?
So I was responding to a caller who said, let's trade Brady for Garoppolo. And I said, you've already missed the boat on that
one. I mean,
Mark, let me ask you a question. Do you think Belichick wanted Garoppolo?
No, I think Belichick
Do you think Belichick wanted Garoppolo? Yes or no?
I don't think he wanted him more than Brady.
He wanted Garoppolo. He wanted to keep Garoppolo. He thought Garoppolo can play. So if you want to tell me to pump the brakes on Garoppolo, fine. I'd also suggest emailing the coach of the Patriots.
I think he'll get back to you. Give that a shot. I like your chances there. Wayne in Rhode Island. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, guys. Love your show. Just wanted to ask you, I mean, the Bruins, I think I heard on the show the other day over the weekend, oh, the Maple Leafs are going to grip their sticks too much, yada, yada, yada. But let me tell you, with the West Coast, I mean, you got the Lightning. I don't see the Bruins getting anywhere. I don't see them getting anywhere by Vegas. I don't see them getting by the Sharks. I mean,
Vegas? Well, Wayne, can we see if they don't absolutely drop a deuce on center ice tomorrow night before we get to Vegas in the finals? Vegas? I just hope that they don't turn into a puddle before my very eyes again in the first round. I at this stage, get out of the first round and I'll be happy. Because I don't even want to talk about Tampa. I mean, Toronto's defense still sucks. I'm sorry. They still don't have good D there. They don't. You get to Tampa, and you're facing Hedman and Strahlman and McDonough. You're going up against a real D core the next round. So I don't know what Vegas, Tampa. It's all they can do not to soil their underwear tomorrow night. Let's just start with that and see what happens tomorrow, and then we'll talk about everything else. I mean, really, getting ahead of ourselves just a tad, don't we think? Back with more after this.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I like anti-compatible. Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Krug steps into it, fires, and it deflects to the far corner. And the Toronto Maple Leafs have rallied to win game 6, 3-1. They have tied this series at 3 games apiece. And game 7 will take place at TD Garden 2 nights from now.
Here we are in game 7. It is what it is. We're at home. We play well there. We've played very well in that building against in this series. We had a tough start the other night, but for the most part, I think we play well there. And our guys should be confident. They've been there and done it, most of them. I think the younger kids are handling it well. So I'm sure they'll be amped up to play too. So should be a good hockey game. I don't think we're going to overthink this one or the previous one at home. We didn't play well enough in the first period the other night. Tonight, I thought we played better from start to finish. Didn't go our way, so we got to make sure we do the things that are necessary in Game 7.
You find it interesting. You know, I think Cassidy, you said he feels like pretty straightforward and even-keeled. I've sensed as the series has gone on, I've seen a little more
frustration.
Yeah, or panic is definitely the wrong word. But
disappointment?
I think it's speeding up on him. I think he's feeling the pressure. I mean, he hasn't been in many of these. I think he was in 1 7-game series with the Capitals that they lost. Last year, nothing was really expected of the Bruins, so I don't think it was a high-pressure situation. But now, you challenge for the President's Trophy. You're wire-to-wire. I don't say wire-to-wire, but for the last, call it, 4 months of the year, you're one of the best teams in hockey. You are. You're the best team in hockey over the last 3-4 months of the year. You're home. You're up 3-1 against a team you should beat. And now you're on the verge of this collapse, on the verge of yet another collapse. And I think Cassidy's, you know, feeling it a little bit, as he should. You know, human nature. I think you're going to feel it. You're not going to look the same, feel the same, have that same steady hand. And I don't know if he totally does. I think he's feeling it a little bit. Babcock, on the other hand, you know, again, this guy's been there a million times over. Won a cup, went to another one, won 2 gold medals. I keep saying he's the most decorated coach in hockey right now. Highest paid, most decorated coach in hockey. And he's older and has been around the block. I thought last night, actually, I watched his whole press conference on TV. You know, I thought he was really good with the tragedy yesterday in Toronto, sort of articulating his feelings and like sort of elder statesman. Like I thought he you know carried himself well there, as he should. You know that's his position. But you have that young team in Toronto, and now you have this guy leading them. I think that's a little bit of an advantage, Toronto. I mean, here's try not to make fun of the accent because he sounds like a wicked Canadian. I mean, he just does. But just listen to his approach here. Here's Babcock after the game.
Well, we're playing a really good team in Boston. The series is fun. It's high-end. There's no room. They got high-end players. But we think we're going to win. And so we thought that all along. We started poorly. And we've crawled our way back. And now you have an opportunity of a lifetime. And that's what we talked about tonight. This is fun. This is where you want to be. Going to the third period, this is fun. This is where you want to be. You want to be in these moments in your life. You don't remember everything in your life. What you do is you remember moments. You remember, and you want to create those moments. You want to create memories. Here's an opportunity for us to create memories with a good group of guys, like each other a lot, play hard for one another. We had a good regular season. We want to have a good playoff. So now we've got to go to Boston, get the clam chowder like I talked about, and then got to dig in and win a game.
So I think having Babcock's an advantage in this situation. I just do. Steady hand, been there forever, you know, all that stuff.
I mean, that's a matchup they weren't going to win coming in, the Bruins. You know, Babcock against Cassidy is, the deeper you go, the more the coaches get involved. That was an edge from the beginning for Toronto.
Okay, back to your thoughts. Michael in Framingham, what do you got for us? Michael!
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, you're on the air. Please go.
Here we go. Do you remember Cam Neely, right? When he stood in front of the net all the time, right? And the Bruins, I think they need somebody like that. Just to sit in front, Neely would just push people out of his way and wait for the puck to come in there and to score goals. And he was a brute, right?
So I'm just going to cut you off. I think Nash did a decent job of that last night. I think Backus did a decent job of that last night. But they really do get to very few rebounds. Or last night, it felt like they got to almost none.
I'm telling you, Toronto's done a better job of that as the series has gone on. Just look at the bodies in front of the net.
And you know who's done a good job of it is Anderson. He's steering those things. Nothing like that atrocious rebound by Rask in the second period last night. He's steering most of the stuff to the corners. But I don't think that they've gotten to a ton of rebounds. So maybe it's just, maybe it's collective.
I'm telling you, there's way more bodies in front of there. Way more bodies in the world. You remember Pasternak, and not even the one he slipped between his legs. The Bruins are picking up pucks in front of the net in the first two games and flipping them in. Now there's none of that. Too many bodies.
Phil in Maine, I'm Rob Gronkowski. What do you think, Phil?
Hey, listen, you guys, what do you think about Rob's earnings? A little bit low?
I think they're a little bit low. I think they're a little bit low, but, I mean, let me ask you, like, should the Patriots pay him like a wide receiver?
They should pay him close to
that. Yeah, a little, you know, more in that direction than where he's at, yes.
Well, Phil, you know what? I'll say this. I don't know if it's fair to expect the Patriots to pay him at a position he doesn't play. Like, it's not the Patriots' fault that the league scale is that way.
Yeah, he shouldn't be getting, like, what Antonio Brown is getting, like, $17 million per, but...
I mean, I think he's as valuable as that.
Yeah, me too.
And
but 14?
And if the Players Association and the league, and there's a new normal, then I would say the Patriots should pay it. But, he should be the highest paid tight end.
No question.
Okay, so that there he's got a beef. And there I think he's still, like, either third or fourth, right?
Yeah.
So, like, that I think is a fair beef on his part.
So, to me, this is why I would still pay Gronk. If they want to settle this thing and, you know, resolve it and end it, and et cetera, you were going to have to give him the money to do that anyway. You did it last year. So don't get petty over that part of it now. You knew that that was an obstacle. And they, in fact, a year ago, they may have said, sweeten the 1 year, and then we'll worry about the next year afterward.
Let me get in Robin Eastie. He just dialed in on the Celtics. They got Game 5 tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. They tip it off at 7 p.m. Rob, what are your thoughts?
Well, what a beautiful day to rock out my Marcus Smart jersey. I'm so pumped. First of all, I need to say that Scary Terry needs to go back on the bench because Marcus Smart knows how to run the offense. He can do pick and rolls with Al Horford, and just how he's a bully on defense, he won't let Dellavedova get all over him.
Okay, so I love to keep asking this. Smart or Rozier?
Smart.
Rozier.
Okay, how has Rozier been the last two games?
Bad.
He keeps going up and down.
And yeah. That's never going to change.
I think sort of smart.
That inconsistency is always going to be there. At least the consistent thing you get out of Marcus Smart is the defense.
Defense
the
travels, baby. That's
yeah.
Right.
It does. Yeah, it does. Rozier's got a better skill set, though. And I just think Rozier's going to be the guy that gets more money. I mean, he's the guy that the skills are harder to find in the league. So, I'm not telling you it's a blowout. I lean toward Rozier. But I'm not sure Smart's going to replace him in the lineup tonight. I wouldn't hope for that.
Maz, who do you like tonight?
The Bucks.
Jimmy Stewart, who do you like tonight?
Milwaukee.
Well, what is up with you guys?
I don't understand this.
Stu, why?
I think actually tonight could have been a potential elimination game for the Celtics. I have not liked how they have played against the Bucks this year, this series.
I mean, if you're looking at
I think
those
they're
terms,
lucky to be tied at 2-2, really.
They might be.
They being I the just Celtics think that, pronouns.
Well, No. Each team has had one blowout, and there have been two close games. One went one way, one went the other. That should be exactly what it is.
I think
game.
The Bucks have outplayed the Celtics.
Jimmy has that overtime game as a loss.
Really?
I do.
Why'd you give him the loss, Stu?
Because you shouldn't have been in overtime. You blew a big lead, I believe, in that game.
Well, the Bucks did the same thing in Game 4.
Well, I just hold it against the Celtics.
I just think that if
Milwaukee... Not allowed to do that?
Yes, you are.
No, okay, thank you.
Good job.
Milwaukee didn't try in the two games here. And I think that that was revealing to me. Like
You'll see it tonight. They'll do the same thing.
So I worry about if Milwaukee plays defense with any sort of intensity, the Celtics are going to have trouble scoring. I just think it's that simple. And so, you know, Milwaukee's got better athletes, and if they want to dig in and stop the Celtics in the early part of the game, the Celtics aren't going to be able to score.
Mike in Medford on the Bees. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Just my thoughts. I agree with you, Michael, about less passing for the perfect shot for the Bruins. I think if Anderson's in their head, they should just pepper him more. And if the refs are going to swallow the whistle, put Marchand out there as an assassin until they call it. And try something different. Pull all stops. It's Game 7.
I hear you. Turn Marchmont loose a little bit. If that's the way it's going to be one of those games.
So I think the only calls you're going to get in this game are going to be egregious calls. But I'll tell you what I do worry about, and maybe this is just because of last night. I worry about the Bruins getting blasted for something in front of the net with the goalie. because I think they're now going to make a concerted effort to get there and establish some space there in front of the net. Anderson will flop, as Jack Edwards has told us 10 times last night. And so, you know.
Did Jack say he flopped on the elbow?
I don't remember if he said he sold it a little. Yeah, or something like that.
He elbowed him right in the face.
But he did. He did flop, though.
Did he?
Oh, God. He didn't get hit that hard. Like, obviously, he gets elbowed and he falls over backwards.
I thought he got cranked right in the face.
That wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. But, and look, and I'm not telling he's any different from any other goalie. A lot of goalies will sell that call. But I can see the Bruins doing some stupid stuff tomorrow night. I can totally see
it. Wait. You can see the Bruins doing stupid stuff in a Game 7? No, would you stop? I don't see that. I've never seen that before. Dante and Linfield, what do you got for us, Dante?
Hey, guys. I mean, this Lamar Jackson stuff is really starting to horrify me. I don't know when these NFL guys are going to realize that these athletic spread quarterbacks just never translate. I mean, just to put it into perspective, we're talking about a guy who had more rushes in college than completions. Well, let that sink in a little bit. Like,
Dante, so when you hear all these reports, I'm sorry to cut you off. When you hear all these reports that the Pats are really interested, do you believe them?
I want to believe that they're not actually interested, but, you know, McDaniels did draft Tim Tebow, and that scares the hell out of him.
So, Dante, I'm with you. This player scares me. I mean, Maz read his completion percentages earlier in the 50s every year.
54-7, 56-2, 59-1.
And he has more rushing attempts than passing attempts?
619 pass attempts, 655 rushes.
Oh, that scares the crap out of me.
The caller's absolutely right.
And this is why people say the comparison is he's a taller right-handed Mike Vick. Even Mike Vick says he's me. He's a righty me.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.
You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha, hee-hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Lamar Jackson, we've talked about the Patriots, and maybe they go outside the box for a Tom Brady number two here with Jimmy Garoppolo gone. They actually had Lamar Jackson in their building recently.
Lamar Jackson slings it deep. Oh, my goodness, what a pass. Touchdown, Jalen Smith. He made that look easy, throwing that 75-yard bullet.
There have been some rumors over the last couple weeks about how much the Patriots like him, and then they trade Brandon Cooks to the Rams, and you say, well, maybe they could take a quarterback now that they had the extra first-round pick. He was the only top quarterback that they had in the building. They didn't have Josh Rosen or Josh Allen or Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, any of those guys. It was just Lamar Jackson.
Keeps it himself. Got a nice block. Hello, Lamar Jackson. Touchdown, Cards.
Yes, the Patriots will consider taking Lamar Jackson as Tom Brady's successor.
All right, a lot of Lamar Jackson noise. Too much noise. Got to be bullcrap.
Quarterbacks later in the week, right?
Today we've done linebackers, and now we're going to do defensive backs. Tomorrow we'll do wide receivers and running backs. And then Thursday on day one of the draft, we're going to do quarterbacks and tight ends, because to pork Brady and Gronk, they're going to take a quarterback and a tight end.
Of course.
Right, Jim Murray?
Yes.
So if you're listening, Maz and Murray are standing across the room here from our usual broadcast location at the Star Market Broadcast Studios at the TD Garden. They've been given a mic so we can hear them properly. I'm holding up a big piece of construction paper with a draft magazine paperclip to it. It's the Lindy Sports Annuals, and this is how we decide who the Patriots are going to take at the draft. We chuck markers at a draft magazine.
Murray's going first again.
This is the only worthwhile draft analysis you'll get anywhere. So I'm going to hold up. Murray's going to chuck it. He throws like an absolute chick.
He really does, though.
So throw it as hard as you want, Murray. Make a mark. Come on.
Oh, my God. That wasn't even close.
Wait, is it the brown mark down here?
He's got the magazine too high, and I don't want to get it on the windows. Yeah.
Don't worry about the windows.
Yeah, break a window. What do I care?
It's this thing down here, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, and again, if you're looking at this at the NBC Sports Boston simulcast, this is the back of a big charity check, but I don't want to snarl up the...
Yes.
The front of it?
Greg Bedard, Boston Sports Journal, chirping at us on Twitter, saying that that's as close to a sixth grade science project you're going to get.
No, it is the most ghetto draft board. You see all these graphics on ESPN and the NFL
Fifth
Network?
Grade tops.
They have nothing on this. This is like a ransom note, this thing. All right, so anyway, you hit on, or closest to, Jari Alexander, Louisville. This is a real prospect. He's considered to go in the first or second round. Jeez. Strengths. Alexander's best attributes are his light feet and fluid hip turn, Maz.
Love the fluid hips.
Which helps shadow receivers all over the field. He varies his drop, alternating between a standard backpedal and sidestep when playing tight, complementing his flashy footwork with a surprisingly powerful punch to jam receivers at the line of scrimmage.
It'll be fitting when he's playing with his teammate, Lamar Jackson.
His weakness comes with obvious size limitations. Ooh, he's 5'11", 192. You care about small corners?
No.
A little bit.
What's Cyrus Jones? Isn't he around the same stupid size?
Cyrus Jones is cut.
That's exactly our point. He comes with obvious size limitations with bigger receivers simply able to outleap him because of their height advantage. He's too aggressive for his own good sometimes, Maz, biting on pump fakes and double moves.
You can rein that in.
Anyway, he's projected here by our folks at Lindy's to be a first or second round consideration. So it's a good good hit there, Murray. Let's go to the second page. These are more day two and more day three considerations, but there's things to be found here. Maz,
I'm going yellow.
Let her rip.
It's the picture, top right.
Felt like a good hit. I see it. Felt like a good hit. That's Quentin Meeks of Stanford. They like
perfect.
They like the Stanford guys, Maz.
Oh, they'll take him in the second round when he should go in the sixth.
They really do. Quentin Meeks, 6'1", 197, their view at Lindy's. Meeks is a three-year starter at Stanford. He became the starting nickel as a freshman before settling in at right corner, posting steady production each season. He's a much better run defender than cover man.
They love those guys.
As a prospect, Meeks' strengths, reaction skills, intelligence, toughness, and weaknesses, lack of explosive traits or top-end speed.
Oh, so Jordan Richards Jr. then.
Bingo. Best fit, zone-heavy scheme or position switch to safety.
Oh, that's got them written all over
it. That does. That has the Patriots written all over it. Unathletic stiff from Stanford who's kind of smart and does a bunch of different things. None of them will.
Yeah, they'll take him in the second round and he should go in the seventh.
Okay, we're just going to shoot for one safety here, kid. So I'm open up to the second page of the safeties. Plenty to choose from. Maz or Murray, whoever's got it.
Go ahead, Murray, you throw.
Let her rip for once. We'll just throw it well.
All right. How about this? Right above that
picture.
Alabama.
Right above the picture.
Right above the picture. Kaiser White. Kaiser White from West Virginia. In our view, Lindy says White has competitive makeup that NFL coaches will want to work with.
Oh, there you go. He likes football.
It's over. But he has a tweener skill set. Perfect.
Exactly.
I'm not going to read anymore.
Oh, no, he can play both.
He has competitive makeup that NFL coaches will want to work with, but he has tweener skill set. Done. Put him on the board. They're taking this guy.
See, some see tweener patsy versatility.
And value. Kaiser White, West Virginia, is your safety pick for the Felger Maz Big Board. Again, tomorrow. We will do running backs and wide receivers leading up to the players they're really taking at tight end and quarterback because it's a palace queue and Gronkowski and Brady are off the reservation. So we continue with your thoughts here. We'll take your calls right up to the final word in about 8 minutes. Celtics game 5 tonight, Bruins leftover thoughts, and this Patriots draft stuff. Here's Jeff on Cape Cod on the Celts. Hi, Jeff. What do you got?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to propose a possible Celtics trade for next season. And I know you can't really base anything off this playoff season because we're missing Kyrie and Hayward. But if you put your big boy pants on and trade Jaylen Brown, Horford, and I think Rozier, while the value's high on him, for an Anthony Davis and Okafor kind of trade. Maybe throw something else around in there, but just wanted to hear what you guys think about that.
Okay, is Anthony Davis going anywhere with all their playoff success?
No.
Finally found something
down
there?
No, you're not getting him now. The thing was, I think he was looking around, and based on anything you read about Anthony Davis, he was looking around what he was surrounded with in New Orleans and realized, you know what, this franchise sucks. Even when they brought in Boogie Cousins, you know, we still couldn't even make it to the playoffs time after time after time. He only got there once, was swept by the Golden State Warriors. All right, they retool. Even though Boogie goes down, they're playing better. Let's add Rajon Rondo, who's been playing out of his mind. Huh, wouldn't you know, like he does time and again when he gets to the playoffs. And now they sweep. As the underdog, they sweep the Portland Trailblazers. They're probably going to give Golden State a pretty good series, especially if Curry comes back and he's still hobbled. He ain't going anywhere. He's looking around now and realizes, you know what? Yeah, this is the place for me. He just had an MVP-caliber type season. They're going to have a pretty competitive second-round series. Continue to build there. He's not going anywhere. And you have Rajon Rondo to thank for it. Rajon Rondo sticking it to the Celtics again this offseason because he brought help bring success to the New Orleans Pelicans, and he's going to cost you Anthony Davis.
I want to remind you that the Felger Maz Expert Draft Board is sponsored by the experts at the Peterson School who train their students on Carrier, the experts at home heating and cooling. Again, the big board has gotten so big. We have dual sponsorships. There you see it there again on the simulcast, the Peterson School and Carrier. I want to thank our friends there for sponsoring it this year. Carrier, turn to the experts. Again, Celtics tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub starting at 7, pregame at 6:30. Colin in Boston on the seas tonight. Go ahead, Colin.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm looking at Tatum tonight, and I'm really hoping that he continues to build momentum on that second half from Game 4, because Games 2 and 3, he really didn't look like the star. He kind of looked like a rookie, definitely was nervous with the ball, and it'd be great if he could match Jaylen Brown's just elevating his game, and it'd be great if he could match that energy and the two of them really take over.
Okay, has Tatum concerned you at all?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. I told you going in that Jaylen Brown might get pantsed in the playoffs, and I think that the one who's getting pantsed a little is Tatum. So Brown, to me, has been good. I mean, and now, again, he's a year ahead of Tatum, so developmentally, so he should be better. But Tatum, to me, has been a little, you know, hot and cold. And so in the second half and in the fourth quarter on Sunday, he was good. I'd like to see more of that.
We've got Nick in Rhode Island on the B's. Hi, Nick.
Gentlemen, I called in on last Friday, told you the same thing. Bruins had a chance to bury him game 5, and look where we are now, game 7. Real quick, Mike, I don't know if you've paid any attention to Roman Polak at all, fifth, sixth defenseman for Toronto, the older guy in the league, journeyman, really.
Yep.
I know it's game 7, and you don't really want to switch things up, but it's also game 7. You might have to pull out all the stops. Put down Jake DeBrusk on that third line where Roman Polak and his whatever defensive partner he is going to play with him, because he's been able to match that third line's lack of speed so far. And if you put DeBrusk down there, who's been really your only bright spot these past few games, I think you got a chance. You can slot Donato in on that second line.
Okay, so that's what I've been talking about the whole time. You want to get Donato in, you move him to the Krejci line, and you move DeBrusk one line because DeBrusk's skill set translates better to the third than Ryan Donato. So that's, you know, I still sort of feel that way. You know, Cassidy was talking today again about Ryan Donato can only play on the left, can't play on the right. So, you know, sort of explaining why Wingles is up there versus Donato. I still say Donato makes, I mean, sorry, Wingles makes no sense playing with David Krejci. He makes sense as a third or fourth line guy, not a second line guy who you need to help solve your scoring problems. No.
I'll
go watch. He'll go out and score 2 tomorrow night. But I just don't see it.
I'll even take Donato on the third line. I will. I'll take him there. I want Donato in that game. It doesn't sound like he's going to play based on what Cassidy said today. I hope that he's just blowing smoke.
Kyle in the car, what do you think?
Hey, two quick things on the B's. Rask, when he plays the puck, looks like an absolute Muppet. And he should have closed out game 5, and he blew it. And if he continues to play the puck like he's doing, he's going to screw up game 7 pretty bad. And then real quick on Rick Nash, I know that's what I called about. He needs to stop curling at the blue line, trying to make like these fancy plays, just put his head down, go to the net, shoot the puck, and create opportunities. He's playing completely soft. I don't even see him on the ice when I'm watching the games. It's kind of sad.
Okay, I noticed him last night. I don't know what you're bitching about last, other than him not scoring, which you should bitch about. And he might have lost his cover on that second goal. The guy he was supposed to cover, meaning the first Toronto goal. So he might have been responsible for that, losing Nylander at the post. But I thought he was noticeable last night. I was okay with Rick Nash last night. Then moving down Rick Nash kind of worked. Now, I don't know. Do you need him back with Krejci? You've been saying that all day, right?
I mean, I'd like him back with Krejci. I just think that he and Backes in some ways are, I mean, he's more skilled than Backes, but they're both big bodies. Nash isn't as fast as he used to be. Like, I'd like to split those guys up and be able to create traffic on multiple lines in front of Anderson.
Again, that Nylander goal, that one to me, that one is so egregious. It's so bad. It started with the Rask. It started with Rask. It started with the goalie. But he wasn't the only one. But it was a little clearing to the left side, and Rask went out to play it, to the caller's point, and missed Chara there in the corner, and they got mixed up, and I don't know if it was Chara's fault or Rask's. All I know is Rask went to handle the puck, and he gave it away. And so Toronto gets it. It goes out to the point, and it's just a nothing shot from the point. Nothing. And Nylander's left all alone. Horrible rebound control on Rask, and horrible coverage down low. And I think it was Rick Nash that lost him. And it's like, you've just gone up 35 seconds before. There's your chance to take a hold of the series and end the thing. And you can't even make it 40 seconds without... And again, that's nothing Toronto did. It was all you. It was just, that is just so brutal. That is such a gag, is what that is. That is such a gag. And I read this earlier. I think the Leafs have scored 5 goals this series within 2.5 minutes of when the Bruins have scored.
I think that's right.
Okay, so 5 times this series, the Leafs have scored in under a couple minutes from your score. Do you know how? Oh, and it was point. They only have 16 goals this series. So every third goal from Toronto comes within 2.5 minutes after you score. You know how bad that is situationally?
Brutal.
Brutal. I mean, that's from the goalie on out. That is just absolutely brutal.
And I mean, that's going to sleep. That's what that is. You get a goal and you go to sleep.
Okay, we continue with the Bruins talk. We'll have a lot of it tomorrow leading into Game 7. The final word comes your way next with Schedule Day Part 2.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Blood force drum!
We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5, the Sports Hub. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Mass's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Mass, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you were looking for the best deal on tires, only one place to go. That's Town
Nobody,
Fair Tire.
Nobody, Jimmy.
The best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town
Nobody
Fair
can.
Tire. Nobody.
Nobody.
All right, we got to get to the second half of Schedule Day. Oh, Schedule Day.
Oh, Schedule Day.
The remaining games in weeks 8 through 16 here on the final word on Felger and Mass.
Yeah.
Oh, Schedule Day. Oh, Schedule Day. Where fans get to pick wins and losses.
All right, bro, we're at the halfway point, week 8, Monday night in Buffalo.
Halloween in Buffalo. Those losers won't even have to dress up.
Yeah, maybe they'll dress up like normal people like us instead. Cargo shorts and a hoodie.
Win.
All right, kid, week 9, at home against the Green Bay Packers for a Sunday night.
Yeah, I can't believe there are people that still think Rodgers is better than Brady.
Win. Week 10, at Tennessee Titans.
I heard that's a wicked party town.
Yeah, bro, a lot of bachelorette parties and live music down there.
And if we're lucky, the Bees will be in town to crush the Preds.
Let's book it.
Win.
Week 11, they got the bye. You love a late bye.
I do. I love a late bye. Rest up right in time to get ready for another Super Bowl.
Week 12, at the Jets.
Please.
Win. Week 13, at home against the Vikings.
I don't want to be reminded about Minnesota. Why did Bill bench Butler? I ain't over it.
He's got his reasons, bro. Don't you ever doubt Belichick. He's the best.
I don't care. I'm still mad.
Win. Week 14 at Dolphins, just like last year.
This ain't right. I smell a Goodell conspiracy. I hate him.
Loss. Week 15 at Pittsburgh, again, just like last year.
It's Goodell again, I'm telling you, and he changed that catch rule to screw him. You watch. Jesse James is gonna catch the game winner.
Loss. Final 2 weeks of the season. Home against the Bills and the Jets.
Best way to celebrate the holidays, bro.
Christmas and New Year's wins.
So not bad. 14-2.
14-2. You guys have actually, you're a little pessimistic this year, I'd say.
Yeah, well, more so than usual. Yeah, a lot of turmoil here in the offseason.
And also, apparently, Jimmy brought this to our attention here. And, you know, obviously it's going to be beeped out. But, Maz, you had yourself a low-key swear. During a segment.
Well, not
today.
Really. I truncated a word that I shouldn't have truncated.
And truncated, for those that don't know what it means.
Yeah. Oh, short.
He's from Melrose. Which
yeah.
I'm in radio for a reason, Maz.
I meant to say the word shifting, and I changed it to movement. But I sort of cut myself off with the shifting.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
Sorry, who with Donato and Krejci?
DeBrus,
well, I mean, that's
too much moving around. I leave him with that group.
I don't know. Having heard it without the beep, it kind of sounded like you said it.
Too much moving around. I started to say shifting, and I didn't get past the first few letters.
Too much
moving around. No, I did come close to swearing it another time, though, when that guy called about Garoppolo.
Too much